I swear to you, my heart just started beating a little faster. I'm not even kidding.
It's Firefly time. It's Firefly time.
Yep. All right. So this is your spoiler horn right now. If you've never seen the television show Firefly, I cannot recommend enough that you rent it, borrow it, purchase it, acquire it, do what you have to do to watch this television show. However, at this point, we are going to start to spoil the very first episode, and I will do my best not to spoil any of the other episodes nor the movie. I need to start with a couple of very, very quick questions.
No, we cannot go to the questions yet.
Not. I just want to know, just did Adina watch
it? We have to talk about spoilers first.
Okay, fine.
So, okay. I need to talk to you about spoilers, and I need to talk to the listening audience about spoilers.
Okay. Lay it on me.
So, I will be asking questions.
Okay.
You should not answer the questions unless the question is direct to you.
Okay.
All right? If I am asking questions about plot,
mm-hmm.
you do not answer those questions. They are rhetorical questions.
Okay. I'm glad you said this because I would have answered them.
If I am asking you a question about a character, asking you a question about something I've seen, you answer that question unless it spoils things. Okay. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Spoilers can even be to the point of saying, you're really going to like the next episode based upon what you told me this time.
Okay, I will try my darndest not to say anything like that.
Listening audience, you must take this exact same tact as Casey. I have already had what I consider to be a spoiler tweeted to me because somebody told me that a character that I've seen in the first episode will appear in a later episode. That is a spoiler.
Guys, okay? Ladies and gentlemen, you're better than this. Don't do it.
I don't want to know anything. Someone said, oh, what about the blank, blank, blank episode? Don't want to watch that one again. Don't want to hear it. If you have seen Firefly, do not talk to me about Firefly. That's it. Don't talk to me about it. If you want to say to me, I'm so happy that you like this first episode, great. But don't say to me, I'm so happy you like this first episode because, or I'm really upset that you dislike the first episode because. No, because, just like, because, like, oh, because you're really going to hate the next one. No, none of this, all right? nothing about later episodes. Because if you out there like Firefly and you want me to commit the next 6 months of my life to watching this TV show, I need no spoilers because I hate spoilers. I am very spoiler averse and I am very spoiler sensitive, which is a very unfortunate mix, right? Like, I hate spoilers and I consider, like, I am one of those people, those really annoying people, that even knowing if something is good or bad, it's a spoiler for me because my expectations are set. And I don't like that. So that is what we need to discuss. With spoilers. I am very sure that on the next episode I will be having to chide all of you again for what you have done. Set the rules.
Yep. The first rule of the Firefly Viewing Club is do not discuss the Firefly Viewing Club.
Firefly Viewing Club has become the segment name.
Just like there that. There you go. We are not discussing it outside of the clubhouse. And we are now we are entering the clubhouse. Are you ready for a couple of very quick and very easy questions?
Yes.
Did Adina watch with you?
No.
Ah, I'm a little sad about that, but that's okay.
It's unlikely that she will, I reckon, because of when I will most likely be watching these episodes.
That's fair.
I like to watch stuff like this as close as possible to the recording, so it's as fresh in my mind as can be, which will usually mean watching it on like Tuesday afternoon before we record the show.
Yeah. This time you watched it, what, Sunday?
I watched it yesterday on Monday.
Okay. Oh, man.
Because it was longer. This episode is like a double feature, right? That's like a 90-minute, which I'd forgotten and was very happy that you reminded me because I wouldn't have had the time to watch it today. And I think you would have just quit the show if I wouldn't have watched this.
I would have been deeply, deeply upset. And that is not a joke. I would have been very frustrated. All right. Set the stage for me. What did you know about this show before you watched it? That's really the only other question I have. Like, what did you know about the show? What were your feelings leading in to watching this first episode?
So, I mean, there are things that I know because we spoke about them, right? Kind of just like, I know that Firefly is a cult hit. Mm-hmm. I know that it only had one season and a movie. I know that many people wanted to come back. I knew it was a Joss Whedon joint.
Yep.
I knew it was set in space. I knew Nathan Fillion was in it. I knew the guy who was in Dodgeball was in it.
the pirate?
Yeah. Steve? Is his name Steve the pirate or something right. like that?
Oh, that's funny.
I've seen that. That guy's in a bunch of stuff, but that's the thing that immediately jumps to my mind.
Yeah.
I knew that it was shown out of order, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, that's kind of all I thought I knew about the show. Okay. There was a thing that I felt about this show before I watched any of it. I was deeply concerned about the hype.
Oh, I agree. I completely agree. In fact, with as much hype as you surely have heard about this show, if it has come within 10% of the amount of hype you've heard, I will consider that a job well done.
Grossly overhyped, just in the sense.
I don't doubt it.
Right? And I'm not talking about my enjoyment yet. Just
yeah,
in that it's just grossly overhyped to me from mm-hmm. you, from other people that have seen the show, and just in general, like about it, you know. People are like, it's the greatest show ever made, which does make me ask this question.
Mm-hmm.
This is a concern that I had before as I was sitting down to watch episode one.
Mm-hmm.
This show's so good. Why have they never made any more?
We could address that, but I think we should save that for another time because we're already running long and that's a long conversation. It is a completely reasonable question, though.
So, I mean, we're going to get into talking the specifics of this episode, mm-hmm. and that will kind of be the rest of the episode. Mm-hmm. But I do have one more company that I want to thank. But I think that before we do talk about Linode, I should actually tell you what I thought about the show. Because
yes, please.
I will want to tell you that beforehand, and also I am aware that I have been keeping you around for practically an hour, and I know you're dying.
I am, and I'm really scared now. But go
All right,
ahead.
So, episode one of Firefly. It suffers from something that a lot of especially science fiction television suffers from, in that a lot of it's really confusing. Just from like a character perspective, like the fact that this was the first episode and this isn't even the episode that people first saw, I don't understand how anybody ever knew anything that was ever happening in this television show. And like, I can't, there are things that happen in this episode that I can't imagine how they were slotted into the middle of the season or whenever it was that mm-hmm. this thing aired, like it was episode 3 and 4. Like, I don't understand. I guess I'll find out, right? Like, with the later episodes, mm-hmm. if and how. I mean, I'm sure it was done and it worked enough, because otherwise they wouldn't have done it, right? Like, if it made literally zero sense, they would never have made that decision. Obviously, it was less than it should have, but whatever. I just can't understand how kind of things would have gone the way that they did, but whatever. It definitely suffers from the fact that it's like, we're creating this world and we're being intentionally vague with things that are happening, and here are all these characters, and we don't really do a great job of setting them up. Like, I can't even remember the majority of characters' names.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this show definitely suffered from a sense of confusion. However, something that what tends to happen to me with these is that this confusion frustrates me to the point that I don't want anything to do with it anymore. Like that, like I feel like if you don't do a good job in explaining who your characters are, then what am I even bothering to sit down and deal with this thing?
Yep, I know exactly how you feel because I read the first 50 pages of the first book of Game of Thrones. I've never seen the show, and there were 800 characters, all with kooky names, none of whom I could tell apart, and I just gave up after that. So I totally understand where you're coming from.
Right, it's why it took me 3 attempts to watch The Wire. Because I would watch like the first half an hour of the first episode and be like, I don't understand a word that anybody's saying.
Completely
and
agree.
I don't know who anyone is.
Completely agree with you.
And I feel like Firefly had some of that. But I just want to keep stringing this out. Like, I
know.
Feel like, is there anything else I can say?
No, for the love of God, Mike, I'm dying.
I really, really liked it.
Oh, thank God.
I may even, because I have said this to other people, I may even go as close to saying that I loved it.
Oh my God, that's so exciting. Okay, tell me about Linode while I squee for the next 2 minutes.
All right, this week's episode is also, and this installment of the Firefly Viewing Club, as we're going to get into my full feelings and review about episode one of Firefly Serenity, is brought to you by Linode. Linode gives you fast, powerful hosting for your projects that you can get set up in just seconds. They have easy-to-understand tools that let you choose your resources and Linux distro, giving you the power and flexibility that you need, and their plans start at just $5 a month for a Linux server with 1 gigabyte of RAM in the Linode cloud. Whether you're getting started with your first server or deploying a complex system, Linode is the right choice for you. It's never been easier to launch a Linode cloud server. They offer the fastest hardware and network with just superb customer support behind it all. Linode guarantees 99.9% uptime for server availability. Once it's up, they keep it that way. Linode is great for tasks like hosting large databases, running a mail server, operating powerful applications, a private Git server maybe. Maybe that's what you want to run. You can do it on Linode. So much more. Possibilities are endless. Linode has amazing pricing options for you. You can get a server with 1 gigabyte of RAM for just $5 a month. You can go all the way up to 16 gigabytes of RAM for $60 a month. And their 2 gigabyte plan includes 30 gigabytes of storage, all for just $10 a month. Linode continues to offer more and more awesome options to meet your server needs. Across the board, they are offering twice the amount of RAM that you'll get elsewhere. As a listener of this show, sign up today at linode.com/analog and you'll be supporting this show and also getting $20 towards any Linode plan. It was 7-day money-back guarantee, there's nothing to lose. So go to linode.com/analog to learn more, sign up, and take advantage of their $20 credit, or use the promo code analog2017 at checkout. Thank you so much to Linode for their support of this show.
I am so indescribably happy right now, I cannot even tell you.
I know there was a lot riding on this for you.
There was. No, I'm not even kidding. Like, there was. And I was stressed. I'm not going to lie. I was stressed. And, you know, it's... The show, no spoilers, the show, I adore it. It is probably, I was thinking about this yesterday, I think it's my favorite drama television show, for loose definition of drama. My point is, it's not Top Gear, right? Top Gear is many things, but not a drama. It is my favorite drama television show of all time. Breaking Bad was phenomenal, just indescribably good. But it was also extremely stressful, where this isn't, I don't think. I digress, though. This is probably my favorite drama television show of all time. And as I started watching it, especially when I started to hear the music, which is this, like, not country, I wouldn't say, but a very twangy, like, old Western-y kind of music. Yeah.
That concerned me.
Which was
honestly.
Yeah, it's fair. That's fair. But I started to hear this music, and it was the oddest thing, because I got this feeling of... just overwhelming joy that I'm going to dive back into this show that, to be honest, I haven't watched in a long time. And I've forgotten a lot of, because it's been a long time since I've watched it. And I get this feeling of, like, oh my God, I'm so excited to watch this. And then I also got simultaneously this, like, sinking feeling of dread and not disappointment, but like horror that A, I know that I will never get any more of this. You know, obviously we're going to watch it, you and I, but, you know, there's never going to be new stuff. And oh my God, what if Mike doesn't like it? Because it's okay if you didn't like, and there will surely be episodes that you won't like, and that's okay. But this movie means more, or excuse me, this show means more to me than the movies that I think you and I have watched. And I love the movies that you and I have watched together. But this show means a lot to me, and I was just distraught that you may not like it. And I am not saying you will like the whole series. I am not saying...
Yeah, I mean, this is just episode one.
No, it's absolutely. And if we get... I don't know if we're going to watch the movie or not. We probably will. But either way, you may not like that. But that the fact that you're at least willing to carry on makes me extremely, extremely happy.
I'm relieved that I could,
I bet you
honestly.
Are. I bet you are. I don't have a whole lot of notes, and so I think I'd like for you to kind of steer the conversation about what you think, and I'll pipe up when I think it's pertinent. But I just want to say I am overwhelmingly relieved that you are at least giving this a passing grade.
One of the biggest surprises to me is that I've seen the opening scene before.
You have?
Mm-hmm.
When?
I don't know.
Oh, fair enough.
But I also have a memory of downloading this show. I know I have downloaded this TV series and started it and didn't continue, and I don't know why.
I don't know. It starts aggressively, to be fair. I mean,
That wouldn't have turned me off. I don't know why I didn't finish it, but I do remember, actually, like, because this has been something I've been aware about for so long, like, that I did attempt to watch it once, but I didn't get past basically the opening scene.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why, but I just didn't go very far. Same with, like, Battlestar Galactica. Like,
I've never seen
stuff
it.
That I would like, but, like, I just never really gave it more than a few minutes. I don't know why. I was really there's an interest in realism which the weaponry has in this show, and I know that it's I know the reason that all of the weapons just look like modern current day weapons. It's a budgetary thing, I'm sure, right? Like, I can feel throughout this whole show, like, a lot of the look and feel of the show is a budget thing.
Yeah, I have a thought about that, but continue where you're going.
But I actually think that it works, because when I start to, like, at first I'm like, really? Like, we have guns that look like today's guns, but they shoot lasers?
Yeah.
But then I started thinking to myself, where I was like, well, why would they be white and blue and clear and got lasers running through them? Like, I don't know how far into the future this show is meant to be, but the thing is, it's like, even when we're making weapons that shoot lasers, they're probably just going to look like mostly like the guns that we have now, because there's a reason that the guns that we have now look the way that they do.
Sure.
And it's probably just going to continue. And then I ended up finding that to be kind of an interesting thought experiment, mm-hmm. of like the weaponry that we have, like, it looks the way it does in science fiction because science fiction shows and movies tend to have really huge budgets, so they just make things look super cool. And then because things look super cool, they need big budgets to make them look that way. But this show seems to have kind of just been like, nah, they're just going to look like, it's just going to be like a bunch of black boxes.
Yeah. So the very first note that I wrote as I was watching this last night is, this is no Westworld. Have you seen Westworld? I don't recall.
No, I haven't.
Okay, so no spoilers there, but suffice it to say, it is clearly very, very well-funded, and everything just looks immaculate. Whereas upon rewatching the first episode of Firefly, it was abundantly obvious, just like you said, that this was not done on the same kind of budget. And this was done maybe not on a shoestring budget, because particularly the CGI, I think, was really good for...
CGI is really good. And when they're on that planet in the first episode, there's more extras than they need.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right? So, like, it must have been, you know, good enough, right? Their budget was good enough. But yeah, funnily enough, the CGI still kind of works.
Yeah, I agree. It's not flawless by any stretch, but...
But it's a 15-year-old television show.
Yeah, but it doesn't feel like a 50-year-old television show, so to speak, you know, whereas a lot of older CGI looks just ancient by comparison. And I don't think this does at all. But I wholeheartedly agree with you that this is clearly on a different budgetary level than most of the shows that we're used to today. What did you think of the opening scene, which focuses around Mal, who is the captain, and Zoe, who is his kind of first mate?
It didn't really land with me because I didn't really know what was going on. And they kind of, I don't really feel like that they've spent enough time looking at what that was. Like, it was interesting to me that someone just, like, immediately died, right? It was very Hitchcock, because I was like, oh, this is the crew, right? Like, this group of people, this is the whole crew, the space crew. But it turns out it wasn't, right? Like, it's actually just a couple of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then the crew kind of grows.
Right.
So that was a surprise. But, like, that opening scene, it didn't really do it for me, especially as the rest of the episode comes on, because they don't even go back to it. It's just like, we were once soldiers, not anymore.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And, you know, it was good. It was good, right? Like, I liked the part where, like, you know, he's like, the angels are coming to get us, and a lot more religion in here than I was expecting, which was interesting. And, mm-hmm. and just in general, I'm keen to see the role that religion has in this world.
Interesting. Okay.
Because there is a role. The religion has a role. But I, you know, I haven't gotten to fully understand all of that yet, right? Like, shepherds. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like, I don't know what shepherds are, mm-hmm. right? My assumption is that shepherds are like priests.
Mm-hmm.
But again, like, I don't feel like I've fully gotten that answer yet, because there is a shepherd on the ship, right? Book.
Yep, that's right.
Mm-hmm. And, so yeah, I'm interested to see shepherd. Like, he mentions that he was in a monastery. So again, like, is he a priest? Is he a monk? Like, is a shepherd just a follower? Like, I don't know this yet. But there is definitely a role that religion plays, and there at least was a role that religion played in Mal's life, although I don't think it does anymore, because at that point he was kissing a cross. And again, I'm assuming that cross is a religious thing. I don't know that it is yet. Again, with the way that some of the stuff plays out in this show, even in the first episode, I'm doubting a lot of what I consider to be my just initial conceptions of the universe,
mm-hmm.
that they're in. So yeah, but I did like all of that, right? Like the angels, but like the angels were clearly the name of the battalion or whatever, or the type of ship that was supposed to be coming to save them, but that never happened. They kind of got left behind, and then it's like flash forward an amount of time, and now these people are scavengers, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. All right. So now the next scene, we're seeing them, to your point, scavenge from some like derelict vessel that's just floating.
I'm not sure I'm going to go scene by scene, honestly. Yeah,
that's fine.
Because that we'll be doing this forever.
Fair enough.
But I will be hitting most of my points chronologically, but I don't think I want to do like a scene-by-scene breakdown.
No worries, that's fine.
I was reminded by the fact that Joss Whedon was writing this when Wash is playing with the dinosaurs.
Why did that make you think of Joss Whedon?
He says, curse your sudden but inevitable betrayal.
Uh-huh.
When one of the dinosaurs turns on another one. It's just a very Joss Whedon line. Like, very self-aware, but funny.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, like, it's very Whedon-y.
Yep, and that's one of the probably most quotable lines from this entire series, as it turns out.
That doesn't surprise me. As soon as I heard it, I'm like, that's something people say to each other. That's something that Firefly fans say to each other. I just knew it. Because it's like the first comedy moment in the show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I can tell it's something that sticks.
Yep.
One of the things that I do really like in this show is like use of language.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I really wanted to know if you noticed that.
Well, the thing that I was going to mention is humped.
Mm-hmm.
They use the word hump and humped instead of the F word.
Yep.
So my expectation is as history has continued to go on and language has evolved, hump means the same thing as the F word, and the F word has fallen off the plane, and hump replaced it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hump this and hump that.
Yep. Yep.
Which I will say is just genius script writing.
Yep, completely agree with you.
Because you're able to swear without actually swearing, and you get all of the same effect. It's very clever.
Did you notice the other one, which they did say a couple of times in the show, Goram, which I believe is generally spelled G-O-R-R-A-M?
I didn't get that. Okay, no.
That, I believe, is what we would phrase as God and then something else. And I think it's just been over the years kind of squished into one word
instead of like gosh darn,
right? Exactly. They say that a couple times during this episode, and that is one of the and there's one other word. I'm not going to tell you what it is. I want to see if you bring it up. But there's an effusive positive word that is used frequently throughout the series. So kind of the antithesis or the opposite of Goram. and I'm curious to see if you, when it is you pick it up, but the two of them, Goram and this other one that I refuse to name, are used frequently throughout the whole series, and I don't really view that as a spoiler. Did you notice anything else about language, though?
There is a language.
Tell me
more.
There is
a secondary language.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to be Asian influenced. Mm-hmm. Do not tell me if I'm right or wrong, because I feel like that's going to be important later.
I am biting my tongue.
And it seems to be a language that everybody knows,
mm-hmm.
but is only used in specific circumstances. Mal uses it when he's really angry or when he's trying to command attention.
Mm-hmm.
So what this tells me is that in the future, Asian culture took over Earth. Assuming these people are from Earth, I'm assuming that they are, but I don't know. I actually don't know that. Because, I mean, there are so many other cues to it anyway. So, like, I assume it's an Asian language or based on an Asian language because of some of the sounds, but it's also all of the visuals. So, my current favorite character, and not because of that, my current favorite character in the show how do you say her name? Inara?
Inara, mm-hmm.
The reason I really like Inara is because I can't work out who or what she is yet.
Mm-hmm.
Every other character in this show, I feel like I understand them and their place in society better than her. So, like, I think the next person to that would be Shepherd Book, because I don't really know what a shepherd is.
Mm-hmm.
But Inara seems to be like a cross between like a geisha and like a call girl.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems to be like what they refer to as companions. It seems to be an elevated part of society. Like, this is a business. She is referred to as a businesswoman, mm-hmm. in the show. She's also called some not nice words. But there was one part where, like, when Kaylee is shot,
mm-hmm.
Is it Dr. Tam?
Simon Tam, yes, that's right.
He goes to Inara, and she has companion standard issue inoculation medicine,
mm-hmm.
which means that there is, like, a whole corporation, maybe, or, like, institution around prostitution in this world.
Right.
So I'm very keen to learn more about her. They lay on a bit thick with the sexualization of her in points. It's like, I totally got it. Like, all you needed was the one scene where she's sleeping with a guy, which at first I was like, really? Why are you jumping this right now? And it's like, no, I get it. Right. Like, this is a business transaction, whatever. But then, like, when she's bathing, it's like, is this necessary? Like, I know, you know, they were going for a certain thing. I mean, if it continues past this point, like, if they keep showing her bathing, I'm going to be like, seriously, guys? But, like, I feel like maybe in this first one, they're trying to show, I assume it's on some kind of ritual, which also kind of lends itself back into this, like, geisha-like feeling of everything. Like, you know, like her ship is decked out with all these drapes, and like the way she dresses is like that, and also I note the way that Kaylee dresses and a lot of the clothing that she has and accoutrement, like she has like a parasol, it's Asian influenced. Zoe does not dress like that, so like there is like is fashion based in Asia? But, like, Zoe doesn't dress that way because she's dressed for her job, right? Which is to be, like a second-in-command on the ship, right? Like, she's dressed to fight. But, like, fashion is more in the Asian world. Again, like, you know, these are some of the things that I'm, like, trying to play up. It's, like, working out how they've got to the point where, like, and that, I'm going to throw another phrase, concubines, like geishas, like these types of roles are this kind of business, this different kind of thing. And then like everything that is surrounding Inara's, like, the way her look and her environment is very much steeped in an Asian feel, I think, at least to Western audiences, right? Like, it's meant to telegraph that.
Yeah.
But then also Kaylee as well. She is that. But then there is this language, right? So, like, there is a thing at play here, which I'm keen to learn more about. But at the same time, also expect to know nothing about, but just, like that they don't tell you that this is the case. But it just continues to build to the point where it's like, this is the lore of the show.
It is, God, it's so fascinating hearing you work through this, and it is so impossibly difficult not to comment on it, because there's so much here. This is no spoilers, I promise. There's so much here that you will see, and it's fascinating to hear you talk through it.
Patience shot you. Yeah, a bit. Very good. And it's very
sure,
Whedon.
I'm pretty very sure Whedon. I wrote that down somewhere around here. But yes, I thought that was fantastic. Yeah, another thing, actually, that reminds me to go back a half step. When you were talking about, like, the bathing of Inara and the scene where she is with her client, there was one or two other places where, to your point, she's clearly sexualized. And what was interesting about that to me is coming from a very ignorant point of view, I'm a white guy. I don't really know what I'm talking about. But it's my understanding is that Joss Whedon is, generally speaking, a very, very forward thinker when it comes to appreciating women and being feminist in all the most positive ways. And it was very striking to me rewatching this show how sexualized Inara was. And I agree with you, Mike, that to some
Joss
degree...
Joss Whedon is now...
Yeah, fair point. And then this was a different Joss Whedon in 2002 or whatever it was.
And 2002 is a very different time.
Also true.
2017.
Also very true. But nonetheless, it still struck me as how sexualized she was. And yeah, to some degree, that's kind of her role in the show. And I don't mean that dismissively. I'm saying that she is a companion. Like, that is kind of that's what she is. But nevertheless, I was surprised, as you were, how sexualized that whole thing was. But it was also funny to me, and what made me feel like it was the Joss Whedon I reflect on and I think about was, and I might be jumping forward, but I don't think I am, when Adam Baldwin, who plays Jane, or so I guess I should say Jane, when he is making fun of Kaylee at the dinner table, and Mal says to him, walk away from this table right now. And that to me was a fascinating character study on Mal, who is very, very multi-layered, and I'll leave it at that. But it's also a very good way to defend, I don't know, I'm struggling over my words here, but I feel like it was the right answer to a situation that was really unnecessary, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with Jane was interesting, right? Because it was meant to show him as being a bad guy, which is important for the way the rest of the episode plays out,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, the questioning of whether he's going to betray mm-hmm. or double-cross Mal. Like, that's interesting. It's nicely played, actually. It ended up not going the way that I expected. I thought that there was going to be a double-cross, but there wasn't. It's like triple-cross, right? Just because the tools that they played out, right? Like, the way that things played out, it looked like that was the case, right? Like, that, you know, the FBI agent was able to escape and all that stuff, right? Like, it looked like it was Jane. And for all I know, Jane did double-cross him, but it just didn't go his way. But he also did stop him from getting killed by patients, so.
Indeed.
It was interesting. I was surprised, two big surprises for me in the episode was when Kaylee got shot and when Mal tells Tam that Kaylee died. Right, because you think she's dead.
Yeah.
Because they play it that way.
Yep.
And it was kind of strange, like, to then have everyone laughing, like, it's like afterwards, like, oh, you scoundrel,
mm-hmm.
you told him. It was weird. I tell you why I like this show. I just got onto the note where it reminds me why I like this show, because I wrote, I think I'm hooked at this point, which is when River appears.
Interesting. Okay, tell me more.
Because there is so much stuff happening in this TV show.
Okay.
Like, it's just like, there are all these things that are going on, and you think these are all these things, and it's like, oh, but now there's a human being inside of a box, and this human being's brain has been experimented on.
Sure.
And it's like, are there people with, like, mental abilities in this show as well? Is that what they're getting at? Right, there's something about River that we don't understand yet. The FBI agent kind of hints to the fact that she's very valuable, like she's very, you know. So there's a lot going on in this TV show. It's not overwhelming, and it all kind of complements each other very well, and it is like this multiple layers of stuff mm-hmm. that kind of really kind of hooked me on it. And I can see why the double-length pilot episode was a good idea.
Yeah. The thing with this show, I don't know if we're really in the summary section or not, but I was thinking about it when we first started talking about it just tonight. And I feel like, and maybe this analogy will make sense only to me, but I typically watch movies or TV shows to be entertained. I typically listen to music to feel a good beat. And you and I have spoken about this. You and I personally have spoken about this numerous times, including on Inquisitive and Command Space. But or maybe it's just Inquisitive. It doesn't matter. Anyway, the point is, I don't typically pay attention to lyrics. And I am not one for, like, the super foo-foo, like, artsy, super deep intellectual movies or TV shows, right? I generally like movies and television and music that just entertains me. And what's fascinating to me about this show is that I feel like in this show, I'm listening to the lyrics. And in this case, what I mean by that is I'm not even that terribly entranced with the action on screen. And what I feel like I'm more interested in is the characters and the way they interact with each other in a way that I am not really in any other show. I think Breaking Bad is similar in that regard, because, and you've seen Breaking Bad, is that right, Mike?
Yeah.
So I feel like the interplay, let's say, between Walt and Jesse, at the very least, is fascinating throughout the entire episode, right? Throughout the entire series. But in Firefly, I feel like I'm so much more interested in the personalities and the interplay between them than I am in the particular goings on in the episode. And that makes it so interesting to me. I find that interesting that I'm so amused by that, which is so atypical for me. Does that make any sense at all?
Yeah, it is. It definitely. I mostly agree with you. Like, for my own tastes, right?
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I found really interesting in the way that they played this show up was the Reavers.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, they are the big bad in this movie. They sound horrific. what I really like is they didn't show them.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what these people look like. I don't even know if they exist, really. Like, I don't know anything about them.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I really liked is when they were coming back. I think it was when they were... No, when they were, like, crossing over them, right, for the first time. I really liked the way that they showed Jane and Inara both preparing in extremely different ways. So Jane starts loading a shotgun
mm-hmm.
to fight, and yep. Inara gets the poison
yep.
to kill herself if she has to.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was really cool. Like, I like that. Because they are, like, the two ways that people would fight, and it felt like maybe the two ways that those characters, what I know of them, how they would react, right? For all I know, Inara's got that poison to stab in someone's neck, but, like, it just feels like what they will do to her, she's like, I just don't want to be alive.
Yeah. Well, in the way that Zoe phrases it, I wrote it down. What was it? Oh,
she
yeah.
She says something along the lines of, like, they will, was it, they will rape us to kill death. Us and tear off our skin.
Yeah they'll rape us to death and then and like kill us and tear and sew our skin into a suit or something like that.
Yeah,
but then she
preferably
says
in that order.
Right, and if we are very very lucky, they'll do it in that order. Like mm-hmm. holy smokes, whatever these Reavers are, they're serious business, my friend. That is intense. And at this point, you know, we don't know if this is a MacGuffin. We don't know if this is the real deal, but it is setting up some serious drama that may or may not ever show up in the rest of the series.
So there's a couple of fake outs that I really liked in the show. One is that Dr. Tam is not the bad guy. It was the agent who we'd barely even seen, yeah. Right? Like, he's just in the background. Very mm-hmm. nicely done.
Although I thought that I did not think that actor was very good, though, to be honest with you.
But you know, you end up working out why by the end of the episode.
Yeah, to be clear, I'm speaking about the agent, the yeah. Alliance agent. Not
That's what I mean. You know by yeah. the end of the episode because he's a bit part.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Right? But I was a little disappointed because I feel like every other actor on the show is very, very good. And even the other bit parts like Patience, I thought she did a great job. But yeah, I thought the Alliance agent or whatever it is, I was a little disappointed with him.
The other is the cargo, the gold bars.
Oh, yeah.
Gold bars?
I'd forgotten about that. I'd totally forgotten about that as well. Yeah. And
genius.
And, yeah. I thought that was very well done, too. I completely agree with you.
We're getting kind of towards the end of my notes, so therefore the end of the episode. I love how there's the standoff, right, between Tam and the agent, and Mal just walks in and just shoots the agent in the middle of the head, right? It's just brilliantly done.
Yep. Oh, I love it. It's funny because Erin and I watch this together because Erin loves this show as much, if not more, than I do. And she remembers it better than I do. But we haven't watched it in a long time. And she's like, doesn't somebody pop that agent right in the head? And then just like you said, Mal just comes strutting in and just whap. That's that. It was so good.
So I actually I found some more of my notes about Inara. This is because... Basically, I'm done with my notes of the episode watch now.
Okay, can I interrupt you very briefly, though?
Yeah.
So one of the things that I loved about this, which I had forgotten about, is at the very end, so this allegedly Reaver-powered ship is chasing them. It's not the very end. That's a bit much. It's when they're trying to leave the shootout with Patience, and they're trying to get back to the ship, and the Reavers, are chasing them, and... Now they're in the ship, they're flying, and the Reavers are chasing them as they're flying.
Why do you keep saying maybe? Stop doing that.
Well,
right?
Because I'm trying not to spoil it. I'm trying not to spoil it.
But they're called Reavers. They refer to them as being Reavers. Right, don't be maybe Reavers. Just do the Reavers.
Okay.
It's my world we're in.
Sorry, all right. Just trying to make... I'm trying to be mm-hmm. overly cautious rather than being too mm-hmm. aggressive. So anyway, so the Reavers are chasing them, blah, blah, blah. And all of a sudden, I forget who it was, but somebody decides to do a spin move. Do you happen to remember what that spin was called?
No.
A Crazy Ivan. Do you know what that's from?
No.
The Hunt for Red October.
I've not seen that movie.
Michael. Michael, you know this serious? About me. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
I've not
God.
Seen that movie.
All right, we're going to watch that. That's the next Mike at the Movies. Whenever that time comes, which will be like 2020 at this point.
No, the next Mike at the Movies is Serenity.
Fair enough. The,
right?
The one after that is going to be Hunt for October. Suffice it to
good
say...
Good luck fitting that in the next year.
I said 2020. Suffice it to say that in the Hunt for October, this whole idea of a Crazy Ivan is introduced, and Hunt for October is one of my favorite movies in the entire world. And so,
everybody knows that about you.
Exactly. So I was very pleased to see a Crazy Ivan make an appearance in this, and I had completely forgotten it was the case. Anyway, let's talk about Inara some more.
So I got sidetracked because I didn't have my actual notes in front of me. So I mentioned that the idea of companions is kind of fascinating to me
mm-hmm.
Because it's this business and there seems to be some kind of regulation. And I'm keen to really see what role sex has in this world because it does it still mean everything that it means now? Is there all, do we still tie emotion into it? How much emotion is tied into it? I'm interested to see how that plays out. I'm interested in understanding what does Inara want? What are her motivations? It seems like that there is some kind of tension romantically between her and Mal, which I'm keen to see how that plays out. And I kind of, in that same vein, but also just want to know the practicalities of why does she board the Serenity? Like, what is that about? Like, how did that begin, and why does she come back? Like, I'm keen to see how some of these things play out. She is the person that seems to have the most depth to her character presented to you in episode one. And I say that because I actually expect that she's not going to be an outlier in this. But, like, I think she is, from my viewing, clearly positioned as, like, this is the person with the most depth, the most layers to them. Or at least the one that I was most drawn to, like trying to work out everything about her. Because, again, I say, with the exception of Shepherd Book, everybody else's roles are defined quite clearly, right? Like, Kaylee is she works in the engine room. We've seen that before. Mal's the captain. Wash is the pilot. Zoe's the first mate, right? And then Jane is the mercenary, right? And now we have Tam as a doctor, mm-hmm. right? Like, we have Tam now.
And what about River?
Well, okay, but River is an anomaly because River doesn't have a character. She doesn't have a defined character. She hasn't got a role yet, right? Like, River is like cargo right now. More than anything else, because all we know is that there is something about her and she's being taken from place to place. Like, she doesn't have a conventional role in the show. I should say a conventional role on the ship is what I'm looking for, actually. That's the phrasing I'm looking for here. Mm-hmm. Like, and also based on, like, I'm also going, like, with tropes, right? So, like, there are tropes. Even for Book, there is a trope, right? The religious man. Like, he is the wise man on board. But I feel like Inara doesn't have that so much. Like, she seems to struggle to fit into that. Because River, say, like, River is cargo, because River is there without intent. She didn't want to be on that ship.
Sure, sure.
She was brought onto the ship, right? But Inara keeps coming back, and I'm keen to understand how she fits in, right? So that's it. What I'm trying to explain here is, like, everyone's roles to the ship, right? Like, everybody has a place on the ship, and those places are defined by other science fiction, other fiction. Right? Like, there is the this person, the this person, the this person.
Right, right.
I don't yet know what Inara's this person is. Is she the love interest? I hope that she's not just love interest. I'm trying to work out what she is. People refer to her as the ambassador, and I feel like, you know, they kind of gloss on over the fact that this is a joke because she's a prostitute. They call her the ambassador. But where does that name come from? Why did they choose that name? Maybe it was just for the funny aside, because, like, we don't know at that point that she's a prostitute. We don't know that that's what her role is. Because all we know is that she slept with someone. She didn't want anything to do with that person. She's headed back to the ship. She's very beautiful, very fancy dressed, right? She's very smartly dressed.
It's a very British thing to say, but yes, you're right.
Mm-hmm. She could well be a dignitary, right? And so maybe they just do it for the joke of when Shepherd says, oh, like, you know, ambassador, is, you know, incredible to meet you. And then for that to play out. And, oh, I'm also very intrigued to see how Book and Inara interact, because they are clearly... companions are not viewed kindly by the religion.
Sure.
Whatever the religion is, right? But the two of them get on, because mm-hmm. Book shows compassion, as his religion also seems to ask him to do, to show compassion for people, so he cares for her. And she just seems to be a nice person, so it's nice to him. shows compassion for him. So yeah, I'm, as you can see, most of my focus right now is on this one character. And because I think that Inara and her role in this show right now is doing a lot for summing up what I like about it, in that there's a lot going on and I have a lot of questions, but they're not annoying questions. They're like, it's intrigue. It has built intrigue, not frustration. So honestly, I'm kind of annoyed that I have to wait 2 weeks to watch the
next one. Oh, that makes me so happy, Mike. Oh, that makes me so happy. Yeah, and you know, I have to apologize to you and the listeners that I think you've probably heard a lot of uh-huhs and sure, because I'm so scared to spoil anything.
That's all it should be.
Yeah, and for now. And for right now, just like you said, I want to err on the side of just not saying anything, because I so desperately, even without your disclaimer, I so desperately do not want to spoil a thing.
Well, because here's the thing, right? People that have seen this show, they get to either laugh at me, or they get to be intrigued by what I'm saying because I'm seeing things differently or not seeing things correctly yet. Or they get to have the pleasure of screaming at their iPhone to say, like, you don't see, why don't you see? And then also, like, but and for people that are just watching the show for the first time, they're coming along on the journey with me.
Yep.
So I think it will be I think this is the way it's going to go, is I will be doing a lot of talking. You'll be saying the occasional thing and going, mm-hmm, that's the next year.
Yeah, it very well could be. Before we move on, let me just look through my notes one more time and make sure there's nothing else I wanted to mention. Oh, I did want to bring up Adam Baldwin being in the show kind of hurts my feelings a little bit, because if you recall, Adam Baldwin, who plays Jane, was, if I'm not mistaken, the man who coined the term Gamergate, which is deeply upsetting.
Coining the term doesn't make him a bad person. It's his beliefs that make him a bad person.
Fair point.
Anyone can coin a term.
Yeah, you know, you're right. You're right. That's a fair distinction. But the point is that I watched this show originally before that was a thing. And I actually, even today, think that Adam Baldwin is actually a pretty darn good actor, but it hurts me to think that, because I know he's such a dirtbag in real life. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of challenging. I think a lot of the great parts of this show and this episode is the dialogue. Like, most of the notes I wrote down were various bits of dialogue. Like, for example, when Adam Baldwin, when Jane and Mal are about to meet patients, you know, and Jane is checking the radio, you know, can you hear me? Can you hear me, Mal? I'm standing right here. Of course you can hear me. Like, that stuff just made me laugh. At one point, I forget what the context was, but somebody said, shoot them politely. I thought that was hysterical. Another bit of really good Whedon dialogue, which is a play between the Shepherd book and Inara. And, well, this is Mal speaking, but Mal says, she's a whore, Shepherd. So how's business, Inara? And she says, none of yours. But, you know, there was not a beat between them. You know, it's just immediate. I just think that was so well written. So much of this is just so well written, and so much of it is subtle. And generally, like I was saying earlier, I don't like the like super art house, like independent film, like, oh, this is so fancy and arty. I don't like that sort of thing. But I noticed when I was watching this, like when Kaylee was getting operated on or perhaps recovering, even Jane, you know, the mercenary that really isn't supposed to care about anyone, was kind of cowering around the corner from the infirmary, looking in the window to see how Kaylee was doing, because even he, this heartless monster, kind of cared how Kaylee was. Mm-hmm. And the way they showed that was so subtle, rather than being like, you know, rather than the ham-fisted approach of him running in and saying, Kaylee, how are you feeling? Oh my God, I'm so worried. They just have him, maybe cowering isn't the right word, but I can't think of a better one, just kind of cowering around the corner, quietly looking in to see how she's doing. Just so much of this is so well done, and so much of it is more subtle than I think I'm used to. Generally speaking, I don't read too deeply into movies, into film, into music, and yet I find myself reading more deeply into this. And so much of there's so many lines that I think are on the surface kind of throwaway and are very good at defining what a character is. And I'm pretty sure this isn't a spoiler, but toward the end when Simon, Tam, and Mal are talking, Simon says to Mal something along the lines of, I thought you were going to kill me in my sleep. And Mal says to him, if I ever kill you, you'll be awake, you'll be facing me, and you'll be armed. And you learn a lot about the two of them in just a couple of lines of dialogue. And it's
I like that.
And it's just so much of that is so impressive and important and interesting to me. And I'm curious to see what you think of the following episodes. I forget which one is next. I should probably look that up real quick. Again, we are going in the intended order, not in the order they were aired on Fox. The next episode is The Train Job. We will watch that in the next couple of weeks. We will discuss it on the next episode, and I'm curious to see what you think of it. But it gives me immense pleasure to know that you are at the very least intrigued, let alone enjoying what you're watching.
Me too.
This could have gone very terribly, Mike, but I'm glad it hasn't.
Still can.
Fair enough. But so far, so good, my friend. So far, so good.
Mm-hmm.